Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We are streaming live on biz1190.com. We are a podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and we're glad you were here. Our guest today is Joel Manby. Joel is the CEO of Herschend Family Entertainment, which is the nation's largest family-owned theme park corporation. Prior to that, Joel was the CEO of Saab Automobile USA. He's had a great career. Joel, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Eddie. It's great to be here.
Joel, looking at your bio, the one thing that struck out to me was that you're from Battle Creek, Michigan. I don't even know exactly where Battle Creek, Michigan is, but I grew up eating cornflakes, so I certainly feel like I know the place.
That's exactly right. It's on the west side of Michigan, beautiful place, small town, great place to grow up. But interesting with Kellogg's, I used to ride my bike to the Kellogg plant because my mom wouldn't buy me sweetened cereal. And the only way I would get sweetened cereal is if I went and took their free tour and got a little snack back after the tour. So I used to hide that under my bed and have my sweet cereal on the side. But Battle Creek's a great place to grow up.
I really did. That was the morning routine at our home, was to get up in the morning and we ate cornflakes. And we put sugar on it. I've stopped that as an adult, but we did put sugar on it. Hey, Joel, you were on Undercover Boss, which had a huge impact on its listeners, and your show particularly had a lot of impact. Tell us how you came to be on that program. How did that come about?
Well, CBS just calls a lot of companies, and we think they want to be filming a theme park company specifically because we have great things to film. We're an exciting kind of company with a lot going on. And I think Disney Universal Studios probably said no because of the legal risks. And I think we were just willing to say yes. And we were probably third or fourth in line because we are from a size standpoint. But you have to sign your life away because you cannot edit it at all. You don't even get to see the contents before it goes on air. So, and this was the first season, so we had no idea if it was going to be positive or negative, kind of 60 minutes or not. And we lucked out because it was an incredible program viewed by 18 million people.
Exactly. Wow.
Which the only program that did better that week was American Idol. So it did very, very well.
You know, Joel, I'm envious of a lot of things in your career, but the thing I think I'm most envious of is that on that show, you got to drive the ducks there at Stone Mountain. That's what I want to do.
It's actually a very difficult job. You have to be a licensed commercial driver on the road. You have to be Coast Guard certified to go on the water because it's an amphibious vehicle. And you have to be able to entertain people by looking in a rearview mirror, kind of looking back at them and communicating over microphone with a lot of energy and sense of humor. And you're doing all three at one time, which is actually a very difficult job. It's tough to find people who can do all three well.
I see them. I am at Stone Mountain every morning. Some friends and I, we walk up the mountain every morning. It's just what I live pretty near there.
That's great.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
It's an absolutely beautiful place, and especially this time of year, it's just gorgeous up there when you get to the top.
It is a very, very beautiful park.
If I understand correctly, from your experiences on that program, you wrote the book Love Works.
Yes.
My former pastor, John Bisogno, wrote a book some years ago called Love is Something You Do. And it, to me, in both instances, those titles are really catchy. Why Love Works?
Well, let me start, Eddie, with the fact that the 18 million people that saw it, I think about 5% of them wrote me. It was just, we were inundated with letters and emails. I have 4 3-inch notebooks filled with these wonderful letters, but it basically showed me that there was a leadership crisis in this country because people wanted to work for a place that cared about people. They wanted to work for leaders that they respected, and they saw something in our program that showed a special kind of company. And it's not a culture I created. I took it over for these great owners named the Herschends. And I just felt from this feedback I was getting, I needed to write a book to explain our very unique culture, which, to your point, we use love as a leadership principle. And it's very unique. You don't see love applied to business very often, but we do it. And it's not love the emotion. It's love the verb. It's not a feeling. It's a behavior. And a lot of people in America confuse love because they think of it as a romantic gesture. And in this case, what we teach is all about behavior. It's not about how you feel about other people.
You know, you list seven principles in there. We can go over all of them before the program. It's a great book, by the way. I read it after I had shown you were going to be on. It's a great, great book.
I appreciate it.
And an inspirational book. You know, the one that I think, Joel, I often tell people that you may have seen it. There's a poster that's out. It shows a ship sinking and just like the stern of the ship's in the air. And the caption says, "Perhaps the purpose of your life is to serve as a warning to others." I think sometimes that's me. And I don't think there are any mistakes in business I haven't made in dealing with people. And you know, the one principle you have in there that I think has been the hardest thing for me, just as a business owner and an employer, to come about in all the years that I've been around, is the idea of trusting people. You put that down. That's one of the principles. Is that you be trusting, to place confidence in those around you. Learning to have confidence in your employees did not come easy for me. Does that come easy for you?
No, and I don't think it comes easy for a lot of people. First of all, thanks for the comment on the book. Actually, I was very. It was number, I think, reached the top five in Amazon for quite a while in the leadership category, and I appreciate that it had a 5-star rating, which is pretty rare. So I'm really appreciative of how well it's done, and I appreciate your comments. But on the issue of trusting, it doesn't come easy. And I think the smaller the company, the harder it is, because when you're entrepreneurial, and I know a lot of your listeners are entrepreneurs, they have their own companies, it's harder to be trusting because it's your money in the business. I've done that myself. I had car dealerships for a while. It was my cash in the business. And I admit, it is hard to be trusting, but the bigger the company you run, the more you have to be trusting, the more you have to delegate by necessity. But the big thing I will say that I have a unique set of experiences because I've been in small entrepreneurial companies like car dealerships all the way to mega companies like Saab North America, $1 billion in sales. Right. And now the theme park business. I can say with great definity that I am a better leader when I learned to trust those I work with. Because let's face it, you've made mistakes. You said so yourself. I've made many, many mistakes. But we got to sometimes let others make those same mistakes and learn it for themselves. Now, let's face it, you can't make mistakes over and over again or you know, your business goes under. And there's a point at which if your employee is not learning from those mistakes and getting better, you know, they do have to be let go. But I think as a principal, we need to be trusting because you'll hire and keep better people that way. And that's the key thing I learned. When I was at Saab, I was much more autocratic. I much more untrusting in my leadership because I had done every job and I knew everything, I thought. When I came to Hirschen in the entertainment business, I didn't know the business. I had to be trusting. I had to hire a better team. And what I found is that in the process, I was a better leader, and I kept and built a better team at Hirschen than I ever did in the car business. So it was an incredible learning for me, and hopefully a learning for your listeners, that you really can build and keep a better team if you're a trusting leader.
Well, it's almost insulting in a way not to trust people, or it seems to me, if you are constantly micromanaging someone, looking over their shoulder, you're correcting all their mistakes instead of allowing them to learn themselves how to adjust and do that. In many ways, I'll just speak for me, is sort of a confession that that's a display of arrogance is what it is.
Well, it is a very good point, Eddie. And do you like it when somebody does it to you?
No.
And neither do I. And high quality A players, none of them like it. And yet, for some reason, we treat other people that way. And then we wonder why good people leave. I think you're very astute to bring it up. And trusting is one of the toughest ones of the seven words.
Well, I can tell you that running my company got a lot more fun when I learned to do that and to have trust in employees, because then you can leave and okay, they're not doing it exactly like I would do it, but they're smart people. They mean well. They're motivated. They trust me as well as I trust them, and they know that if they make a mistake, I'm not here to hammer them for the mistake. I'm here for to all of us to get better about it and just figure out what we did. And I'm not here to hop down their throat because they made a mistake. I just think that's such a valuable deal. There was a book a number of years ago, and I can't think of the author's name right now. It was called Flight of the Buffalo. I heard this gentleman speak, and he was from your part of the country, the Midwest, and he owned a family-owned meat packing business, and he wrote a book, and his idea behind it was he had done some research, and he said that the old buffalo hunters years ago used to shoot the dominant bull in a herd, and the rest of the herd would then just mill around, and then they'd pick them all off, and he used that, the idea of running a business, and his own experiences is what he used when he had learned when he would leave his plant. The people, he was such an autocratic and demanding and unforgiving boss that when he left, the people would do nothing. Everyone was afraid to make decisions, afraid to exhibit any leadership at all because they were afraid it would anger him. And as a result, they just milled around, and the company did very badly. And his point was, if you want your employees to do that, if that's what you want, is when you leave the company for them to just stand around like a herd of buffalo and do nothing, well, then treat them like that. You know, make sure you're always the dominant bull and no one but you gets to make decisions. I think that was his point.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that author was Jim Belasco.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And that's a great book. He actually used to be on the Hershen Entertainment Board, believe it or not. So I knew him for a while before.
I did not set that up. I didn't know that, I promise.
No, I know you didn't, and I haven't seen him for years. But it's a very powerful principle. And like I said, a lot of entrepreneurs tend to be that way. And if you can learn to trust others, but you brought up a really important point, Eddie, that it's how you handle failure. And if you punish failure and that people are fearful to move, you'll never have an innovative company. You'll never take the right risks. And the subtlety and the magic and the part that's hard in this is when do you step in and when don't you? Because obviously, every time you step in to override a decision or stop something from happening, you are taking, you're hurting the relationship. You're taking trust out of the relationship. It's a withdrawal in the relationship. And obviously, we make deposits every time we trust somebody. And let's face it, we can't always let things go. And that's the art. When is it going to be catastrophic for the company? When can I not accept it? It just happened to me a few weeks ago where...
Joe, let me interrupt you for a break here just a moment. Is an art, and I agree what you're saying as to when to step in. Let's continue this discussion after the break, if you don't mind. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Joel Manby, the president and CEO of Hershend Family Entertainment. A great guest. Joel, before the break, we were talking about the idea of how we handle failure and when the art of when we step in with an employee and when we don't. And that is something that I struggle with, and I can tell from the way you talk that you do too. Do you have any further insights on that for our listeners?
Yeah, I have. I have one very simple question that I use in trying to determine this art and when to step in, and that is, what's the worst case scenario of this decision, and can I live with it? And if the worst scenario is something I can't live with, and I think it's going in the right decision, in the wrong direction, I'll step in. And it steps in usually with a big capital decision, an acquisition that I'm not supportive of, or a bit, you know, like a roller coaster that we're put in for $20 million that I don't agree is the right thing or it's going to get a poor return. I will step in on those big dollar issues. But most things are pretty small and they can be handled in a variety of ways. And usually the worst case scenario is not that catastrophic. And frankly, I'll let it go because we have 14,000 employees, 26 properties. I can't be involved in all the small decisions anymore.
Now, Joel, you have no way of knowing this, but I'm almost a professional rodeo. I'm a roller coaster rider, so I can ride any roller coaster and tell you if it's good or not.
Excellent. We'll have to get you out to our parks. We in the last 2 years, we have had the number one roller coaster in the entire entire industry, including Disney, Universal, all the big players. So we have some good ones.
Which one is that? Which one?
Well, the one that won 2 years ago was Wild Eagle in East Tennessee, Dollywood. And then this year, Outlaw Run, which is the first wooden coaster in the world to go upside down three times.
Oh, wow.
Silver Dollar City. Brand new technology in the industry. Hold another story if we ever had time. But it's fascinating technology in the wooden coaster industry.
I would love to do that. Joel, I've often noted to my friends and just in my own thinking that workable leadership principles and biblical principles go hand in hand. And as a person who obviously espouses that, why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, I think that biblical principles are timeless. They've existed for thousands of years. They are a playbook for solid human relationship, tight and close human relationships. And I think that's the way you get the best out of people, is have strong relationships with them. And that's why I think biblical principles are good. No matter, ours happen to come from the New Testament. We define love from what Paul said about love in the book of 1 Corinthians. But you think about, no matter what you think of Jesus or who he was a great leader. And,
right.
and he said, hey, love is a very, very important commandment. And that was revolutionary in the first century to talk about that. And we just think it's a very powerful principle. And if you took the Bible out of it, if you took faith out of it entirely and just said, how do you have a great business? Everybody would say, you need great people. And if you want great people working well together, they need healthy relationships. And the way you get healthy relationships are really through the attributes of love, the verb. And if you think of it that way, it makes complete common sense. But it's just because people misperceive it as being soft, when it's not soft at all, that they're afraid to talk about these biblical principles. And I think that's one of the things wrong in American business, is we've taken some of the heart out of it. And it's not just about the financial numbers. It's about the numbers of your guest scores and your employee scores and how they're treating each other. And then the numbers, the financial numbers will happen.
You know, Ken Blanchard, the guy that wrote The 1 Minute Manager many years ago,
yeah.
I later heard him speak at a leadership conference, and I can't remember the exact title of the book, but he wrote a book about leading like Jesus, which was, and he became a Christian later in life, I think.
Yes, he did.
And that was a point that he made, was that even before he was a Christian, he found the leadership example of Jesus to be fantastic, even though he did not believe in Jesus as his Savior.
Yeah, well, if you look at just the fact that he was a band of 12 men and the way he poured into them and trained them, and they created this unbelievable faith and religionists all over the world, it's a pretty amazing leadership story in and of itself. But Ken has written several great books about leadership and using biblical principles. Highly recommend all of them, but he's right, and it's timeless. And I think the key thing is, we focus in our company on behavior. We are not trying to talk about people's faith at work. We talk about it. It's very clear where our values come from. They come from the Bible. But we have people of all faiths, no faiths, working in this business. Just on my executive team, we have all major faiths of this world represented, including agnostics and maybe even atheists. But it doesn't matter what their faith is. It matters what their behavior is. And that, and it comes from the Bible in our case. And we measure those seven words of love that you talked about from Love Works. We measure those, and we call them the B-goals. What kind of leader do you want to be? Now, we also have all the quote-unquote do-goals, like margin and profit and cash flow, and everybody has those. But we measure the do's and the B's, and you have to do well at both to get the best score. And that's how we implement a faith-based system into a secular company.
That's fascinating, because that was what I was going to ask you about. I do the same thing. In our company, obviously being a Christian is not required to be an employee. And my company is not large like yours. I'm in small business. We have about 30 employees. But being a Christian is certainly not a requirement of employment. There are other things that obviously we look at when we do that. But we do espouse those principles, and we expect everyone to go along with them But they all are, as you had mentioned early, timeless principles of being respectful of one another, not lying to each other, being truthful with each other and with customers, and you know, treating people with respect, and working hard, expecting, you know, getting a good price for our work. All of those things that do that. And I was actually going to ask you, and I'm glad you went ahead and answered that, because I was going to. That's one of the things I think sometimes Christian business guys worry about is, how do I do this? And as a Christian, espousing Christian principles, how do I do this without, you know, crossing a line and telling someone else what to believe?
Well, and it really is what I said is focusing on behavior. And frankly, I think sometimes too many Christians or people of faith in any religion, I think they get caught up on some dogma. And in the Christian faith, they get caught up on the Great Commission, which is telling people about the gospel message. I think that's very tough in a work environment. People have to want that. There has to be a relationship. There has to be something going on in their life. And we focus on the Great Commandment. The Great Commandment is to love God and love others. And loving others is, you know, that's the number one commandment in the Bible, as well as loving God. That's where we focus, because anyone can love others and do it effectively. And so we focus a lot more on the Great Commandment versus the Great Commission. Not that we won't use opportunities if they present themselves, but it makes it easier for us.
I think that's a great point. No one can really argue with the fact that it's better to work at a company where people are respectful to one another. I mean, there's nothing.
Exactly.
I mean, who would ever complain about that? Or that you don't lie to each other, or that you and that you do what you say you're going to do. You keep your promises, and that includes from me as the boss, or from anybody else, that if an employee tells me they're going to do something, I expect them to do it. Just like,
one of our principles is forgiving,
right,
and being unselfish or being kind. Who's going to argue with those in a workplace environment?
Right, exactly. I interviewed a few weeks ago an Army officer, and we talked about a lot of military leadership principles. And one of the ones that I was surprised that came up, and it kind of goes right down your alley here, she talked about that, this was a female combat officer that had led a combat military unit. She said that you have to love those under your command, which is an odd thing that a lot of us who think about the military would think of someone saying. We have less than a minute. I just wonder if you have a comment on that.
Yeah, some of the most honoring letters I've got, honoring letters, come from the military people who have read my book, because a very strong military principle is you take care of your team,
right,
and you have to love them to be able to do that. So I think there's great parallels between love works as a principle and the military principles. I think that's a great point.
Although a lot of us, I think, would find it almost surprising, I think you're exactly right in that. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. More to come. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Keep in mind, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. We are podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and we're glad you're here. We're continuing our discussion with Joel Manby. Joel, we were talking just about, again, the leadership principles and the ideas of loving people at work, and love being a verb, and you have, in your book, you've actually broken that down into seven principles. One of them is the principle of patience. And from what I read about you, and just what I would surmise, probably just looking at your career, I'd be surprised if you're a person for whom patience comes all that easy.
Well, you're exactly right. I'm not a patient person in a lot of ways. But let me clarify something. The patience that's talked about in Love Works is not being patient with poor results.
Right.
As a leader, you can't have poor results. You have to hold people accountable. What it means is being patient in difficult situations. So it's how you react to bad situations. We have a very simple but powerful phrase in our company. We say, praise in public, but admonish in private.
Right.
And how many times have you seen adults or even kids who are ridiculed in public, and it just kills their self-esteem and their direction and their confidence? We always try to give people the riot act in closed doors, behind closed doors, and then we try to praise publicly. And that's just what we mean by being patient.
One of the other, I've mentioned already that at our company, one of our values that we actually have a set of values, we ask everyone to sign when we hire them that they agree to these values. One of them is that we are truthful with each other and with our customers.
Right.
And truthfulness is one of the seven principles of love that you have in your book as well.
Yes. And, you know, we had the first two are being patient, which I just talked about, and being kind, which is really being an encourager. They're both very positive. But without truthfulness, the issue, the principle of using love as a leadership principle can break down. And we don't just mean being truthful, like not cheating or not lying. The harder part is telling others when they're failing, telling others when they're not performing. And we have a whole system and some very simple techniques that we use that are in the book, and I won't go into now, that show people how easy it is to have that difficult, truthful conversation. And not only do individuals need to know how they're doing, but they need to know how the company is doing truthfully. And so we have a lot of communication efforts in our company, because without truthfulness, you'll never have a strong culture.
I heard Jack Welch at a leadership conference here very recently say, and in fact, we were talking about this in our company last week about this. We were sort of admonishing ourselves a bit on a couple of failures that we think that we've committed in this area. Jack said that if you have not taken the time to tell an employee how they're doing, you have no right to go in there and fire that employee if you have not given them feedback as to how they're doing. And that's an interesting.
That's exactly right. I agree with that 100%. And I actually have stopped firing in these companies. Anytime an executive is going to be fired in our company, I demand to see the paperwork. And if there's not a clear path in the paperwork, I don't let it happen. Because there's many leaders out there who are not as strong as they should be, and it's much easier just to fire somebody than to have that tough conversation and give them a chance to succeed. I mean, I see it as a personal failure. If I have to fire someone that works for me, it's just as much my fault as theirs. And so I agree with Jack 100% on that.
You know, but isn't that one of the great principles of leadership anyway, is the idea that leaders must be responsible. I mean, you must accept the responsibility for
absolutely
for what goes wrong. You can't blame somebody else for it.
It's also what makes being the number one person the most difficult thing. I mean, anybody who's listening to this program and is the number one person in their company, whether it's small, large, or whether it's the head of a household, it's difficult. And the biggest transition in leadership is going from number two to number one, because all of a sudden there's nobody to talk to anymore. And it all, if it was easy, it's already been taken care of. The stuff that comes to you is never easy. And it's never black and white. It's never formulaic. There's always art and science. And it's what makes leadership an incredibly difficult job, but a great calling for those of us who are in it.
Exactly. And one other thing before we leave that subject, I know that you've been active in church and in other organizations. Having been a corporate leader, and you are now a corporate leader, do you have any thoughts for people that are in volunteer leadership? I have tried occasionally to bring my business hat into church, and it doesn't always work. And I find it actually, it takes more leadership in a volunteer organization than it does perhaps in one where you're paying everybody.
Oh, absolutely. I think the nonprofit leaders and church leaders have to be some of the strongest leaders out there. Because their employees, a lot of them aren't paid. They're volunteers. I happen to go to North Point. Andy Stanley is
right.
An incredibly strong leader, as well as a great communicator. It's a pretty rare combination. But you're right. It's very important to have strong leaders in nonprofits and churches. I think a lot of churches struggle with it because sometimes great communicators aren't also great leaders, and you have to have both to be really successful. And sometimes truthfulness, as we talked about, that's one. Sometimes it doesn't exist in these nonprofits like it should.
Right. And while we've got you here, tell us a bit about Hershend Family Entertainment, about the business, so where you're the CEO and president.
Yes, we are the largest privately held attractions company in America. We have 27 properties now in 11 states. I said it wrong earlier because we actually just acquired the Harlem Globetrotters, which is a big brand, fun business that everyone's familiar with. We also have major theme parks around the country like Dollywood. We partner with Dolly Parton in East Tennessee, Silver Dollar City in Branson. We run Stone Mountain Park, of course, here in Atlanta, and many aquariums, dinner theaters, all kinds of entertainment. But the common denominator is they are all family attractions for multi-generational families, and it's always wholesome family entertainment, and we really are going to hold on to that mantra. We will always put product forth that mothers can trust. They never have to worry, no matter what medium we're in. And we may branch out into even more mediums than certainly just theme parks, water parks, theaters, and now with the Globetrotters. We will always have wholesome entertainment, and we will always have leaders that lead with love as a leadership principle, and that's our common denominator.
You guys have won two applause awards. I didn't know what that was until I read that about it, and I just looked it up. So I just learned what they were, and I expect most of our listeners don't know what that is. What's an applause award?
It's like the Academy Awards of the theme park business, and Disney's up for them, Universal Studios. We have to compete with them for those awards, so it's really tough to get. And yet Dollywood and Silver Dollar City have both won those awards. We always get the award for best Christmas festival. We do that really well. Friendliest parks, cleanliness is a high score for us. And like I told you earlier, even have some great innovative projects and coasters like we have the last 2 years. So for being a privately held company, we're very innovative. Like I said, 14,000 employees, a lot going on, huge impacts from Obamacare and other things that, you know, it's just a very complex, sometimes very difficult business, but very enjoyable at the same time. And it's fun to watch families have fun.
I was going to say, you do sound like you have fun doing this, Joel.
Oh, I love my job. I'm very lucky. It's, you know, it's very stressful. It's a lot going on, but I really do feel called to it. I feel like I can execute my own belief system here, and that's a great thing when it can integrate how you are at home and at church or whatever you practice faith-wise and your work. It's great to integrate them all.
You had a very successful career even before Hershend Family Entertainment. You're a Harvard MBA. You were with you were an executive with Saturn, and you were the CEO of Saab USA. And I was just reading a little bio of you that while you were at Saab, your sales increased by 67%. Just as a business guy, that makes my mouth sort of water. That's a huge increase.
Well,
how in the world did you do that?
It was a low starting point. Put it that way. We had tremendous success there, and that was back before Saab started hitting bottom during the GM bankruptcy years. We had some great success, good product, great team, restructured the dealer network. I loved Saab and I love Saturn. But it's a very good lesson, honestly, Eddie, for anybody listening, because I personally helped build those brands, invested most of my life in them. And then when GM went into bankruptcy, they cut those two brands as part of their restructuring, and it killed me. I mean, it physically killed me, and I was so angry at them for doing that. But you know, it just shows you not to put all of your personal self-worth in what you do, because it could be gone tomorrow. And I learned a great lesson from that.
You know, Joel, when I look at your resume, I mean, everything about you really says success. You were a valedictorian of your college, along with being a Harvard MBA and an incredible corporate career. You know, but we have people listening, Joel, who have perhaps stumbled a few places in their career. They've probably fallen on their face, and they've not quite made the wisest decisions, but they are they're trying now. And you have advice for those people?
Well, first of all, you're making an incorrect assumption that I haven't stumbled several times. Any kind of bio that you read on the back of a book can be filled with all the great positives of anybody in their life. And we can all make our careers sound only successful. I've had huge failures. And I left Saab to run a Greenlight.com, which was Amazon's car tab. And basically, lost that business. We had to sell it in a fire sale in the internet bubble. And it was one of the most difficult things of my life. I went in depression and had all kinds of emotional issues, drank too much. You know, it was just a really, really tough time. But I learned more from that failure than any of my successes combined. So I think the main thing I'd say to anybody out there is we all fail. And it's how we handle failure and what we learn from it that makes us successful, so to speak, or makes us move forward. Anybody who says they've never failed, I would not invest with them.
You're exactly right. You know, I'm not glad you had the failures, but I do appreciate you sharing that because I think it's quite inspirational. You know, John Maxwell has written a book called Failing Forward, and I think that's the idea. When you fall, just fall forward. And pick yourself.
Well, it's hard. It's, you know, it sounds good, and I love John. I love the book, but when you're in the middle of failure, you know, you can't get out of bed in the morning sometimes. It's hard, and I don't want any of the listeners to think that I haven't had incredibly difficult times where I was at wit's end, thought about getting out of business. You know, we've all been there. And yet it makes you grow stronger. And I would never have ended up where I am having so much fun if I hadn't gone through what I did. So I'm glad I did.
We're talking with Joel Manby, the president and CEO of Hershend Family Entertainment. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to today's final segment of Driven to Business. We're talking with Joel Manby, the president and CEO of Hershend Family Entertainment. Keep in mind that if you've missed part of the program, it will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. So go there and check us out. Joel, this may be a redundant question now, given a couple of things you shared with us in the last segment, but given all success you've had, looking back, What's one thing you would change if you were given the chance?
Well, we already talked about not being afraid of failure, that failure will happen. But I didn't specifically say don't be afraid of it because you'll learn a lot from it. But the second point I'd add is as I look back, I wish I had changed jobs one less time. And I can't quite point to what it is, but where it is, but I'd probably say when I left Saab, I proactively did it. And I wish now I had gone back and say, if you don't do X, I'm going to leave. But I got angry because I actually tried to reduce my responsibility from I wanted to give up Asia and just focus on the United States because it was killing my marriage and the travel and all that. And instead of really trying to work that, when they wouldn't do it right away, I just took the job with Greenlight in the .com thing, and I left. And I wish, in hindsight, I had tried harder because really my workaholism was my personal issue. It was me more than it was the company. And I didn't realize that till it was too late. So that'd probably be my one piece of advice.
You know, my son works with me now, my son Trey, and we had talked before about the fact that when I was younger and they were younger, that I was a workaholic. Of course, then he kids me now and says, but Dad, you seem to have gotten over that pretty well.
Well,
all the time off I take.
That's nice that they say that. That's good.
Well, I think he's it's actually it's a veiled insult. I mean, you should be at work more, Dad. I always like to ask this of successful leaders like you. Do you think that leadership skills are innate or are they learned?
I think they're both. I actually think the desire to lead is quite innate. And, you know, from the time I can remember as a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, even when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9, I always wanted to lead things. I wanted to be in charge. Some people just don't want to be in charge. That part, I think, is innate. But learning the skills of leadership, I do think, is learned. Like for me, being trusting, to your question earlier, or being truthful and having those tough conversations with people, even though I don't like to have those tough conversations, that is a learned behavior. But I do think it's tough to make people who don't really want to be the quarterback be the quarterback. I heard a great analogy when I was in pre-law. Someone said, you don't want to be a lawyer. Lawyers are like referees in football. They kind of keep track of the rules. You want to be the quarterback. You want to run things. And so I think that's kind of innate, to be honest with you.
I've never heard it put quite like that, but I think you're exactly right. There are people who do seem to shy away from all from leadership responsibility, and they're good followers, but they do not want the ball passed to them.
They don't want it, you know. And in sports, I always wanted to have the ball in the final seconds. I wanted to take the shot. I wanted to throw the pass. I don't know what it is. But some people are just like that. And you're right. And there's some people who are wired to be number two, and they're incredibly good at it. But anyway, I think a lot of the skills can be learned.
I think, one thing that I find interesting in serving at church, both in a leadership capacity and as a follower capacity, like being, say, a member of a choir or something, we give positions to people like choir director or whatever, anything you want to say. And we, most of us acquiesce to that leadership position, and the truth is, we get annoyed if that person doesn't lead. If you have accepted a position of leadership, the rest of us want you to lead. I mean, we're here. Lead us. Don't keep throwing the ball back over to us when you're supposed to have it, or get out of position.
That's right. When you're given the responsibility, lead and move, and you can pretty quickly tell when people don't really want to lead, and they. They either blame it on other people, or they don't really want to make a decision, and they try to get too many people involved. And that's why leadership's hard, and it's not for everyone.
Joel, given your perspective, from your perspective as a corporate CEO, and also as a person who has given a lot of thought to this idea, and who speaks to a lot of folks about this, is there a leadership crisis in America, or are we doing okay?
I think there is a crisis, and I mentioned earlier the response I got from being an undercover boss told me that, and I think the actions of our Congress in the last 8 weeks has told us that there's certainly a political leadership crisis on both sides of the aisle, by the way, not just one or the other,
right.
And I think there's too much greed in corporate America. I agree with some of the criticisms there. I think a lot of the crisis that we've had in this country since 2008 was caused by greed and poor decisions that we've gotten away from some very, very simple, basic business principles that got us to the table in this country, which is a whole other conversation. But all added up, I do think we have a leadership crisis. And one of the reasons I wrote Love Works was to try to give people permission to lead a different way, that we need stronger leadership in this country. We need leadership that cares about other people. And I love Joe Kennedy's quote when he wrote a review of the book. He's CEO of Pandora, the great radio internet
right,
company.
Right.
And he said it's a must-read for leaders who care. Because the truth is, if you don't care about people, you're not gonna love leadership anyway. But I do think for people who care, there's got to be a better way to lead than we see in our government and we see in a lot of big companies. And that's why I wrote Love Works, and that's why I think a lot of people want to run their own business.
We were I just got back from Russia, Joel, on a trip over there, and was in St. Petersburg in Moscow, and in St. Petersburg, going to some of the large museums there, the Hermitage, some of those, you see some of the czars and the over the top opulence that they exhibited, carriages with covered in gold and diamonds, and saddles covered in diamonds, and they would go out and ride these apparently in front of these starving peasants. And I think it's the antithesis of what you're talking about, of someone that cares about the people they're leading. They're basically flaunting their position in front of them and telling them in so many words that you're worthless and I'm great.
Exactly. That's, well, unfortunately, we still do that in our society today. If you
right.
look at some of the homes that are built by some of these executives, I won't name the industry or the play, but you see it. It's just, who has the most toys wins, and it's disgusting to me in a lot of ways. I like the people who say, I want to make more money so I can give more money away. Those are the
right.
people I'd like to hang around with a lot more than those who want to buy another house or another boat or another plane.
We have 1 minute left, and I want to ask you this question. Given everything you've accomplished, how do you want to be remembered? How does Joel Manby want to be remembered?
That is such a great question, and I actually wrote my epitaph already, and I want to be known for the quality of my character, the quality of my relationships, and the quality of my work, and how I was as a husband, father, friend, and leader, and that's what I want to be known for, and very little of it has to do with what I do every day at work. It's more how I am as a human being, so...
Well, Joel, you've been a great guest. I've enjoyed talking with you. I've made several notes while you're talking. I think not only did you write a fantastic book, I think you'd be a great boss to have. And that's anyone listening will pick that up from hearing you.
Appreciate that. I've really enjoyed our time together. It's a great program, and I appreciate you talking to a lot of great business leaders and helping us share ideas with each other. So thank you for what you do.
And I did make notes here. I'm going to take it back. I'm going to steal this and take it back to my company. I'm just warning you. I wrote down Beagle. And Dougals, so we're doing this just so you'll know.
All right, that's awesome. Well, thanks, Eddie. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for being here, Joel. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're here on WAFS Biz 1190 every Saturday at 11 a.m., and we'll see you next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.